The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
There are so many reasons why I got into teaching.
One of the best things is the light bulb moment.
When you see a pupil suddenly understand something, that's really, really special.
Every child is so full of potential. And the thing that makes me proudest to be a teacher is seeing them realise what they are capable of.
I don't think any other job can give you the same satisfaction.
That's why I chose to teach.
You could get £26,000 tax-free to train, search, apply to teach. Selected subjects only, subject to eligibility.
You're now listening to Gamertag Radio's E3 2015 coverage. This is Gamertag Radio, a Gamertag Radio exclusive. Let's get this started.
Welcome to Gamertag Radio 488. This is your old Godfrey, and we have our crew over here. Let's start off with Possum J. Possum, what's up?
How you doing, Danny?
I'm good.
Doing really good. Busy day, long day, a little tired, but the things that I saw, amazing.
Is it because it's the first day of E3?
I think so. I think it's more because E3 started on a Sunday, which threw me off. And now it's like, even though we're technically day three, this was like the first show floor day.
Yes.
And yeah. Like when you have an appointment, you have to be point A to point B. Everyone get out of my way. Stop taking pictures in front of me. I need to get somewhere. But you know, once you get that vibe down, once you get into that mode, energetic mode, it just everything carries over. So I just, you know, appointment. Everything I saw today was really, really cool. Really impressed me. Talked to some really cool, passionate people.
And we're going
to
talk about that in a few
minutes. Talk about some stuff.
Yeah. And also we have Pete Rock. Pete.
What's up? What's up? What's up?
What's up, homie?
I'm doing good. And you?
It has been a very interesting day. Very interesting day. We'll talk about that later.
Absolutely.
But how was your first day at E3?
Hype. That's my theme word for E3 2015. Hype. Nothing but excitement. It's been a blast walking through the corridors.
Yeah.
Seriously, walking through the corridors. It's a whole new experience for me.
Yeah. And also we have Paris. Paris, what's going on, man? What's up?
Hey, man, it's E3, day one. It's so funny, and I've been saying it a few times today. Did we ever leave from last year? Because I swear it's like, it just seems like E3 just rolled back around again, and everything just fell into place, and I'm going to meetings, and I know exactly where everything is. I'm seeing old friends and saying hello to everybody along the way. But it's been a good day. Been a definitely good day.
It felt like the year just went
so fast. Yeah, so fast.
Yeah. I mean, compared to last year, Paris, like, overall, do you think it's too many people, or you think it's just right, or, like, E3-wise? Because, I mean, there's not thousands and thousands of fans attending E3, but it's a good amount of people extra.
I'll say this just on my own personal level, is getting borderline too many people. Just trying to walk through the PlayStation and the Microsoft booths was like trying to find a sardine in a catfish barrel. I'm trying to make bad analogies. I don't know. It was way too many people.
Yeah.
Today.
We're going to talk about that because I really want to talk to you guys about E3 overall. Is it a good idea to invite more people? Bad idea? Do you think having it how it used to be previous years, you think they should keep it that way? Or we'll talk about that later. Mm-hmm. I know there's the good and bad, so I want to get...
There's pros and cons for each side,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, I want to get opinions from everybody about it. So head over to GamertagRadio.com. Post your comments and feedback. Also, head over to play.it, listen to our past episode, or check out our content that we've been recording during the week of E3 and share it with your friends. Let them know the stuff that we've been working on. I want to know, like, your feedback. Are we doing good or bad or what? So hit us up, you know, Twitter, Facebook, all that good stuff. Also, give us a call, 76-273-7GTR. That's 76-273-7GTR. All right, Posse, I have a couple questions for you, man.
Okay.
Shoot. Today, I think one of your first appointments was CampComp.
It was.
How was that?
Really awesome. First off, they had a really nice booth set up. They had individual little stations for each setup. Which is great because the Street Fighter setup was on a big screen. Two players were sitting on a rise podium, and they had two famous professional fighting game announcers and a separate glass booth commentating live to people being watching it streamed all over the world. So yeah. It totally fit that bill of the Street Fighter community. They had Devil May Cry off to the side with a nice little demo. They had this really cool setup because they announced Resident Evil Zero. They're remaking the old GameCube game, how like they did the Resident Evil HD earlier this year, bringing that back. They put in like this cool little train car setup, mimicking the style of the game. Really nice vibe to it, but more importantly, the games. Unfortunately, I did not get a chance to play any Resident Evil or the recently announced Mega Man Collection, but I did put some hands-on time with Street Fighter V and Devil May Cry 4 Special Edition. Mm. So first off, Street Fighter V. It is really bleeping good.
Wait, like, was there really enough good characters to choose? Or was just like
it
maybe
was a
four
decent amount.
Two?
It was all the ones they've announced in bar, like, you know, Cammy, Birdie, Ryu, you know, Nash, Bison. So like, you know, all no one knew. These are all returning characters. Okay. But like, as the developers explained to me, they wanted to announce the older characters first, so that way there's more anticipation for the new people. Because like I asked him, you know, this is a brand new Street Fighter. Street Fighter 4 was a defensive game, focus attacks, turtling, zoning, footsies. It was all a very, you know, hyper competitive chess game.
Yeah.
With five, they're kind of going back to how Alpha was and Third Strike was, where there's more emphasis on being aggressive. You're being rewarded for being aggressive. So a couple of new features they added. They have replacing the focus attack is your basically your V-ism, your V-trigger. Mm-hmm. And that's broken down in a couple different ways. So one of them is if you push both medium attacks at the same time, every character has a unique special ability. That can be like a parry, kind of like Ryu had in the Street Fighter 3, where it will stop an attack. And, you know, so any combo you're stuck in, you can throw that out, reverse the rolls. Other characters have overheads or, you know, lower attacks they can use. It's a really quick way to switch up your gameplay. Or if you feel like you're getting beat into a corner, you can turn the tides quickly. That carries over as another thing as well you can do, bat with these buzzwords they use for them. But there's a gameplay mechanic where you have your V gauge you fill up, which is separate from your super bar, obviously. You have the super bar, you can fill that up by doing damage, do super attacks. But replacing the ultras in Street Fighter 4, where it was kind of rewarding you for losing, it was a comeback mechanic, they threw all that out. So there's no more comeback mechanics. You have to win on your own terms. So what they have is this great system where it's a two-bar setup called the V-Gauge. You can burn one bar of that to do this great basic get-out-of-free-jail card, which is like hold back and forward and all three punch buttons. And that will basically burn through any attack your enemy's throwing at you. And the best part is it's usually something unorthodox. Like I got put into a corner. I was, you know, down to the final seconds of a match I was about to lose. I was Cammy, and I activated her you know, V reversal. Essentially, she flies over the head, kicks him in the back of the head, and I win. And it was really awesome.
Let me ask you, did they say anything about online?
Nothing early. They said they want to focus on it more. I did get a quote out of them from interviews saying like they are making a new net code called Kagemusha, separate from the Street Fighter 4 net code.
Okay.
So it looks like they want to be competitive out of the gate. They don't want to have a situation where something comes out and they have to patch it and respond to server issues.
They did that a lot with the previous
game.
They
did it a lot. That's why they had different iterations of the game. They were kind of tweaking the net code, adding new features, trying to figure out what they wanted to do. Now that they've established themselves that Street Fighter is back, in my opinion, like the king of the competitive fighting genre, with five, they can go all in and say, look, we know this is going to be a game played, you know, worldwide, like Evolution every year in Las Vegas. These are the people going to be Twitch streaming this, YouTube streaming this. So we're going to make sure this works out of the gate. Cool. And, you know, it's accessible, but still any Street Fighter fan, you pick this up within a minute, you're like, wow, this is a completely new Street Fighter. Mm-hmm. And even in this early stages, I mean, I think it might be my new favorite Street Fighter, which is kind of ridiculous to say after playing
only a few
matches of this game, but like the pacing of it and the style and how rewarding it is to dominate your opponent versus the older games where you had to play smart if you wanted to win. Obviously, you can be aggressive, you know, play the game how you want. Mm-hmm. But the pros, the higher, the top echelon of the competitive players played a certain way, and people had to mirror that to come out on top. I'll be fascinated to see what they can do with this new metagame for Street Fighter V. But so far, I am superbly impressed. I'm all on board. I cannot wait for this game to come out.
All right.
This is Gamer Tag Radio. Voicemail 786-2737-GTR.
Imagine having a chance to get tickets to see the Golden State Warriors win the NBA Finals or the Chicago Blackhawks lift Lord Stanley's Cup. At ScoreBig, you can get the opportunity to get tickets to see the games and shows you want to see from the rafters to the front row. At ScoreBig, you save on every ticket every day. That's where you should go first to check on tickets, even events and seats you think you couldn't afford in the first place.
So, Pete, if at being a Laker fan of the purple and gold, when we get Jahlil Okafor with the second pick here,
right,
you're telling me I should go to ScoreBig.
Absolutely. So there's a statistic that says 40% of tickets to events typically go unsold. And the typical cost savings for ScoreBig customers are on average of $80 per purchase. So you can have an opportunity to get tickets for the event that you normally thought you wouldn't have access to by going to ScoreBig.com.
So what you're telling me is, as a Tampa Bay Buccaneer fan, and now that we have Jameis Winston as our quarterback,
right,
when he takes us to the playoffs and I want to go to a playoff game, I can just go to ScoreBig.
Absolutely. Just next time you want tickets to go see your favorite team, your favorite players, think big, save big, score big at ScoreBig.com.
This is Gamer Tag Radio. Voicemail 786-2737-GTR.
And I know, Pete, you got to see a couple of things today. But before you say anything, I have to mention this, because today I had a very interesting appointment. One of my first appointments, I had to, the chance to check out the new Tony Hawk's Pro Skater game and also the new Transformers that from Activision. It's an associated game, right? Mm-hmm. And here's the crazy thing. I'm there sitting down, right? And I'm checking out, you know, Transformers and everything. And they were like, oh, yeah, this is before they even press start. And they're like, oh, yeah, this game is developed by Platinum Games. I'm like, wait a minute. Did you just say Platinum Games?
The Platinum Games?
The Platinum Games? They're like, yeah, they've been working on this for a while now. And let me tell you, the first people that I thought about was you, Boston, and Paris. And the reason why I thought about you guys is because Boston, more because of the Platinum Games, you know,
huge
they have a
fan of their
huge
content.
Fan of their games, right? And Paris, he's like me. We grew up in the 80s, you know, yeah, the old school cartoons and stuff, right? And they have the original actors.
They have to. That's
they have
half
the voice
show.
Actors from Transformers. They're also involved with this. And dude, I want you guys to check out the game on Thursday. Whenever you have the time on Thursday, go check it out. Sit down with Planet Games. And if you guys can, do an interview, whatever. I know when you guys get out of there and get to see this game, you guys are going to be amazed. The game is so much fun. So much fun. And yeah, of course, that Platinum style, Platinum game style that it grades you like when you defeat an enemy or like an area. Same exact thing, but think of it as just Transformers. And the boss battle, the first boss battle was intense. Crazy, crazy. It, honestly, I really thought about you guys, man. So also, during the Tony Hawk interview, I was interviewing the producer of the game. And I'm there, you know, we're talking about the online features. You guys could go right now to play.it or gamertagradio.com to check it out. So I'm there talking to him, and we were talking about, dude, the timing was just perfect. I'm telling him, so Tony Hawk, is he really, really involved with this game? Like, how does that work while you guys are developing this game? He was answering the question, yo, literally 3 seconds later, Tony Hawk comes inside the room. He looks at me, hey, what's up? Talks to the producer and everybody other there from like Activision. And I froze. I stopped the interview. I'm like, all right, I put my mic down, got up. I talked to him for very quick. I'm like, yo, the game is a lot of fun. You know, it reminds me of the old school Tony Hawk. And we took a picture and everything. And it was just like random. He just popped up out of nowhere.
He heard your summoning. You said his name. So. He's like, I'm needed.
He's like Beetlejuice.
So. Yeah. So yeah, that was cool. But
Birdman. Boom.
Pete. So tell me like the stuff you got to see today. I know you got to see a lot of like accessories and also game stuff. So talk about that.
Yeah. So I took a stop by the the Turtle Beach set. I know they were really happy with Poston's review from a couple of weeks ago with the 800.
Oh, great.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh,
nice. Yeah, that's so dope. They've got a couple of other products coming out. I can't really talk much about it because it's a product that it's harder to explain than to show visually.
Okay.
I know when we stopped by later on with you, Danny, and I tried to explain the whole concept of hypersound from Turtle Beach. Danny just looked at me like I just slapped his kids.
You know?
Literally like I just slapped your girlfriend, Jen. You just looked at me like, what are you talking about?
You know what? I was confused. Like, when you were explaining to me, I was like, what are you talking about?
All right. So the concept behind hypersound is directional audio plates. All right. So you've got two speakers, somewhat similar to like the Dyson fans. Like they're just circles, but you look at them, they're like, what do they do? Mm-hmm. So instead of being speakers that just shoot audio to everywhere, they're directional. So the perfect example was what they showed there on the show floor behind doors. And it's something that they'll be putting up in end caps in like Best Buy and things like that coming soon, where you could be 5 feet, 2-3 feet away from the actual end cap, and you can't hear. You might hear a bare whisper of what the intended sound is, but as soon as you hit that focus spot, which is a configured area of where you're supposed to be sitting or standing, depending on the application of hypersound. And it's like you're full blast, like you're listening to it, like you're in a studio or you're at the movie theaters and you're listening to a full blast, but nobody else hears it. So it's the solution for people like Paris and myself who might be gaming late night and we sit there in our living room playing Destiny till 2-3-4 in the morning in the middle of a raid.
Me too.
The only thing our wives are gonna hear is us yelling through the microphone on our headsets, but they're not gonna hear anything else coming out of the speakers in the house.
That sounds game changing. Even I want that. I want to blast some music at 2 a.m.
Right. So Paris is looking at me like, Jesus, what do I gotta put in? What do I gotta do?
No, no, no. Because I've been rooming with you for the last couple of nights. If you happen to fall asleep while you was playing Destiny, she's definitely gonna hear something else.
All right. So right now, the only way you can get hypersound is actually if you go to an audiologist and get yourself tested to see if you have a hearing problem, tinnitus, things like that. If you qualify, you can actually get it waived as a medical thing, maybe even have insurance pay for it. But they will have a retail application of it coming soon. So hopefully, God willing, Nomine Patri Filii Spiritus Sancti, if we could get that as something we could check out more in detail, and we'll give you guys more details later coming soon.
All right, cool. Paris, what about you, man? What you got to see this today?
I got to spend most of my day with Devolver Digital. They do a lot of the indie games and stuff. And
yeah,
the one game that, well, a couple games actually stood out to me. Shadow Warrior 2, I got to check out. There, if you've played the original Shadow Warrior, it's a first-person shooter type game. You're this character, Wang, and just think Deadpool. He's very snarky, makes a lot of comments. He makes a lot of funny comments as he's going, taking on the bad guys. And it's set in kind of a fantasy world. There's like ninjas and demons and all that kind of stuff that's running around. You're using a combination of swords and guns to fight your enemies. But with Shadow Warrior 2, they're adding in a co-op option. So you can now do co-op up to 4 players.
Okay.
But the one thing that stood out to me was the fact that they're adding in random. It's a loot driven game. So you're going to be repeating levels over and over. But what they've done is randomized the level. So no two encounters will ever be the same. You may come into a level and a door that was locked the first time you went through might be unlocked this time and leads to a completely different dungeon that you never saw the first time. Things like that.
Okay.
And the incentive is, like I said, is going to be go back and replay these levels to get various loot, to get better weapon, gear, that type of stuff. That stood out to me. That looked like a lot of fun. But the game for me, I have to say, was Mother Russia Bleeds.
Mother Russia Bleeds?
Man.
Yes.
Remember games like back in the day, like Streets of Rage or Fists of Fury, stuff like that?
Yeah, yeah. Great soundtrack, too.
right up that alley is what it is. It is a 2D side-scrolling brawler. You can play it with a friend, so you can do two players. Right now, it's optimized to do it for local, which they say is the preferable way because that's how you did it back in the day in the arcade.
Yeah.
But they're planning on adding an online component to it as well. Dude, we was playing. PR had come in and kicked me out.
That was one of the games that they showed at the yes. PlayStation
Conference. Yeah, that was hyper-violent.
Also, like, you were playing the PlayStation 4 version.
Yeah. No, we're PC.
PC,
because
okay.
it's a development. But yeah, it's going to be on PS4. They plan to have it on Vita, and it'll be on PC as well. But a lot of fun, man. It was fun, and just some of the crazy characters that you encounter as you're going through it. I mean, because we went through a couple levels, pleasantly surprised.
Really?
By that. Well, pleasantly surprised like by it. That. And what yeah. I like about it was, it's not that here's the other thing. The developers that I were talking to, there was these Russian guys, and we were all just sitting around laughing and joking, and they kept saying, it was like, Pettis, if you do not like this game, we're going to lock this trailer. And by the time you leave here, you will like this game. Yeah, like, yeah.
It sounded like Miss Cleo's uncle or something like that.
it was a throwback to when I was a kid playing video games, and it was a blast. So when that game comes out, I believe they're expecting it to come out later this year. People are going to like it.
Excellent.
Definitely recommend
that.
That's
cool. And I like that you mentioned Streets of Rage, because honestly, that game, especially the first one, those first two games had like the best soundtrack at that time for that type of game. Yeah, love that
to
game.
To me, that's kind of what got me into games. Like, I started with Mario like everyone else did, but until I got my Genesis and was like, oh man, they have these kinds of games?
Yeah.
Sold ever since. So hearing you say such high praise for a game in that style in 2015,
that's pretty
that
dope.
Gets me really excited.
That's dope.
But I mean, that's what Devolver Digital as a publisher, they do anyways. They get these type of games because they do like Hotline Miami, Talos Principle, things like that, that you may not necessarily think are going to be these amazing games because they're coming from the quote unquote indie side. But once you get your hands on and play them, I mean, they're great. So yeah, I had a great time spending the majority of my day over there, and then met up with Pete, and then later Pawson came in, and we got to see Deus Ex. Was it called Mankind?
Mankind Evolved.
Yeah, Mankind Evolved. They took us through a demo just to kind of show us some of the features that they plan on having in the game, how stealth works, how combat works.
Yeah.
I mean, kind of gave us a top-level view of what the story is going to be like, you know, the choices that you may have to make. Like, what was the one scenario where you were basically interrogating the guy, and if you made a certain choice, you'd have more time because the choice we made, the alarm, he set off the alarm. Whereas if we'd have made a different choice, he wouldn't have set off the alarm. So we could have gotten out of that scenario without having to take on the guards, just things like that.
Yeah, but it's on your point. What I liked a lot is that dialogue that you had with the leader of that faction, you know, specifically set out, you know, because they went out of their way to show us the stealth first, you know, the non-killing method. And they were like, all right, let's start killing people to show you the combat. And then the boss was like, hey, you just killed like half my guys. Why should I even talk to you in the first place?
Yeah.
Meaning like it opens up whole new dialogue conversations if you went the non-killing route versus the stealth route. And that really impressed me how seamless that was. And I got to give them props. I've never seen a dialogue system that says the entire sentence of what you're going to say other than it's like a vague emotion. Mm-hmm. I like that. I don't know why people don't seem to like want to put a bunch of text there, but I kind of want to know what I'm going to say in a very important situation where like it can change the entire aspect of the gameplay. You know, like, oh, I said the wrong thing. He set off the alarm. They just kicked in the door.
Why people don't really...
I don't understand that. Yeah. I guess it's BioWare's fault because they started popularizing that concept of picking dialogue wheels, but they're always so many times, even in The Witcher, I've done that.
The Witcher is very, like, it's not crazy dialogue. It's just like, okay, these two choices are
Geralt's
three.
A pretty straightforward guy, but I'm just saying that I've had situations like Mass Effect and other games where, like, I've said one thing because I assumed to be said in like humor or a jest, but it's said in a completely different way and like ruins my whole conversation. I'm like, what? Why?
Yeah.
Come on now.
Yeah.
But going back to Deus Ex, I like the augmentation options that they brought. Mm. Now we'll have we actually have an opportunity to sit down with a developer and we'll do an interview tomorrow. I believe I'll be there. Paris, I believe, is going to be.
I'm very excited for that. I'm very excited.
So, you know, we'll get. You know, we'll give that to the listeners. We'll give them a deeper dive into Deus Ex.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, in short, I like the fact that some of the augmentations that Adam has returns you know, Cloak is back, X-Ray is back, but then they brought in a whole new host of new augmentations.
Oh, okay.
Icarus Such Dash, cool Icarus Strikes, remote hacking, the Nano Blade, and then the one thing that I saw from the teaser a couple weeks ago or a couple months ago when we originally saw the teaser, we told everybody to stop the podcast, go watch the video, and come back. The Titan augmentation. When Adam gets encapsulated in that crystal glass,
the nanofiber cool glass.
Jesus.
Stuff.
Oh, Jesus! Like I was like Vince McMahon in that WWE meme. Where he's just like
he's falling out of the chair.
He's falling out of the chair. Oh my god!
I gotta say, like, you know, I know he Pete really liked the last Deus Ex. It wasn't for me. I couldn't get into the game, but man, I've never seen a sequel to a game do such an about face of, like, as they said. They just wanted to make all three aspects of the game, stealth, combat, and the dialogue, up to like 11. And they, what I saw, definitely I agree with. They killed it with the presentation. The gameplay looks solid. I mean, what a fascinating world.
I like the fact that it gives you that option. I know in today's gaming industry, society, everybody's, oh, it's got to be a shooter. It's got to be action-oriented. It's a hack and slash. Chop heads, or I got to use chainsaws and chop people like in Doom or Gears of War. Yeah. But then you've got the Deus Exes where you can do the whole game, and it's a non-lethal.
Yeah.
That option is there. So if you don't feel comfortable going through, you know, throwing weapons, cutting people's heads off, blood, gore, everywhere, you could do the non-lethal and still succeed through the game. Mm. Props to them.
Well, we're going to take a short break. And after we come back, I have a couple of things to say to you guys about Kickstarter. I want to see, like, what you guys thought about the whole... we had a great conversation. Okay. Paris was there.
I got some words for that.
Paris. We got to talk about that conversation.
No, absolutely.
Kickstarter. Because a lot of people are not really seeing the whole picture. They probably, at the moment, got hype and just put the money down and that's it. But we found out a couple of things today that it is very, very interesting. You guys were not there. You, Pat, possibly were like doing your own thing, and P2. So, but Paris is the only one who was there. So we're going to have a conversation about that. And anything else you guys want to talk about before we, after we come back after a break, and we talk about all this stuff?
Well, let's see when we come back from a break.
Yeah, that's true. That's like a break. All right, so we'll be right back after this.
Voicemail 786-2737-GTR.
DraftKings.com, everybody. Baseball is in full swing, and you can be a part of the action all season long at DraftKings.com, which is the official daily fantasy partner of Major League Baseball. Daily fantasy means no season-long commitments, just instant cash and instant gratification. Why would you wait to the end of the season to get paid when you can win huge prizes every day? At DraftKings, it's like a brand new season every time you play. Just pick two pitchers, pick eight position players, and pick your cash. That's it. Ask Pete. Pete, DraftKings.
Love it.
You love it. Why do you love it?
It's easy. Most of the time, you got to wait to the end of the season, and you don't have to deal with any of that. You don't have to deal with, you know, a two-hour draft or any of that. No, it's pick it that day. You win money.
So if you're listening to this, use our promo code GAMERTAG, and you can go to DraftKings.com today and be a part of the $10,000 fantasy baseball contest. That is DraftKings.com. It is the official partner of Major League Baseball. Enter that code GAMERTAG for a free entry now at DraftKings.com. That is DraftKings.com.
Voicemail 786-2737-GTR.
All right, so we're back here at Gamertag Radio 488. And today we were at the What Bush party, Michael Pachter's party. He invites us every year. It was great. We got to hang out, chill, relax. You know, we worked a lot today. So there's a lot of people in the industry there, man. A lot of people. We got to see who? Paris. We got to see Garnet.
Yeah, shout out to Garnet. Yeah, I got to talk to Garnet Lee.
From Amazon. Yeah. Who else we got to see? Kevin Dent.
Yeah, Kevin Dent, Jeff Keighley was there. We saw the guy that you thought was the other guy for PlayStation, or at least I did. Because I still forget his name, but the guy not Andrew House, but...
The guy you thought was Andrew House.
But the VP who presented pretty much the entire PlayStation press conference. Last time. Remember, he got the gray beard now?
Oh, he was at
My name. I'm being bad on the name.
Yeah.
But he was there.
Okay. And I'm sure people are screaming at us right now as you're listening. Yeah,
I know. They're like, really? You know who that is?
All the Sony executives? What's wrong
with
you?
Yeah. But overall, it was a cool party. It was,
oh, absolutely. That's why we like to go every year.
Yeah, like that party to me is more like relaxed, get to see people, just chill. Because we work a lot. During the first day to me of E3 is like the most toughest out of all the days because it's a lot more people. It's just everybody starts late. I had like appointments that started late. It was just a pain in the butt. But yeah, that's why I was like, let's go to Michael Pachter's party and just relax and stuff. But we had a great conversation with someone. I'm not going to mention the name. But Paris, Kickstarter, PlayStation, Shenmue 3. I have to say this. At the press conference, you got to see me going straight to Kickstarter as soon as they made an announcement of Shenmue 3. And I put $30 for the digital copy of Shenmue 3. I knew they were going to make the money right away. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing.
And they did.
9 hours.
And they
Before
did.
We go to Paris... Pause him very quick, 2 seconds. Do you think this was like an independent thing, like okay, or do you think Sony was really involved with that?
Oh no, they're involved with it. It was a marketing thing for sure. Just because it set it apart from every other game.
Pete, do you think it's a marketing or not?
I see Kickstarter becoming the new pre-sale.
Okay.
Like the pre-order for the future.
All right. So Paris, the conversation we had. It's going to be very controversial.
No, it is controversial in the sense of I feel like they use the name of Shenmue 3 to basically it was a marketing tool. The whole Kickstarter thing was just used as marketing because it didn't need that $2 million to get funded.
No.
PlayStation investors or whoever were going to fund that game to be they basically used that Kickstarter as a way to get on stage the other day at the PlayStation press conference and get people excited about Shenmue. It was basically a gauge to see, should we go ahead and move forward with this?
Yeah.
Well, Kickstarter
is up
less
to you
than
guys,
a day.
The
absolutely. Because look, the $2 million is not what's fun in the game. That was just to see if everyone truly was still excited about Shenmue, which we found out that they were.
Yeah.
Because the other thing that we need to realize is the Shenmue that we get ain't going to be Red Dead Redemption 5. It's not going to be this mind-blowing open-world game in the Shenmue universe.
It won't work.
It's going to be closer to what was originally on the Dreamcast and then on the Xbox, the original Xbox.
Yeah.
So I think people almost in a way be excited because you want to finish the story of Shenmue and you're loyal to it. There's a nostalgia to it. But don't be excited expecting it to all of a sudden redefine gaming and do something that hasn't been done before because that's not going to happen.
It already did that when it came out. It made its mark, and a lot of games took inspiration from Shenmue to this day. And now that it's back, I agree with Paris. I mean, it's going to be probably very similar to Shenmue 2 setup, but to me, that was it still is a unique game idea, and the world was so interesting. The characters you talk to, that's what drove me to play it, and that's what gets me excited about a new one whenever they finish making it.
Yeah, but here's the thing. That was very smart. Like, dude, it was so smart from Sony to do that.
That was genius.
So smart. Because it gets the gamers excited. They like me, I put $29 into Kickstarter. Within seconds, I was just hype at the moment. Like, oh my God, I want Shenmue 3. But now thinking about it, like now, 24 hours later, they're like, wow, they got me. They got not only
me. But you know you're going to get your $30 worth.
No. I am getting that. Trust me, I'm getting that for sure. 100%. But here's the thing. People are not really... They're seeing it as like, oh, this is like an independent thing. Do you think the main person that worked on... What's his name? The main person that worked on...
is it Yu Suzuki?
Yu Suzuki.
Right. So, do you think he's... I think that's more of a... Like a consultant. I don't see him as... I think they're using him as like, okay, he's the big dog.
Here's the thing. It was so funny. At the press conference, I think I was joking with Andrew, whoever was right next to me when he came out. I was like, they literally put him on a plane, flew him all the way from Japan to come out here to walk on stage and say, hi, thank you very much, and then walk right off. It's not like he did this groundbreaking speech on why Shenmue is important to gaming and why we needed to come back. He didn't do anything. He's just the face.
Yeah.
He's the face because he links the nostalgia of the original two games, you know, 15 years ago to where we are now and to get old fogies like us excited to want to go throw our money and our wallets and PayPal and Apple Pay at the screen to fund the Kickstarter. Man, that's all it is. And
they want the gamers to feel like, yeah, I was part of that moment.
Like, yeah, I was there for that experience. Because you think about the alternative, if it was a AAA game, they'd already funded it and they just came out and say, hey guys, new trailer for new IP, you know, or just whatever vague thing you want to say. And then all of a sudden it's a CGI trailer for Shenmue 3. Everyone loses their mind and it says, you know, coming whenever. People will be excited, but we wouldn't be talking about this the next day. It's because how they approached it, how everyone that was there felt like they were part of that moment. Like a couple of other announcements they made at PlayStation that night. They were very smart in scheduling that press conference. And like Paris said, you had you out there because he is the face of Shenmue.
No,
Seeing him in person.
Yeah,
but you know, validates the game.
But I feel that it was just more than that. I feel like it was more of, oh, let's get some buzz. Let's bring him here.
Buzz is an understatement. Like when you bring,
but you know what I'm saying. Yeah, like, we want this press conference to be better than the competition. Let's get the gamers excited. Let's you know what I'm saying. Yeah. I don't know. It's I don't know. Like going to E3 now for 10 years. You learn a lot of things of the stuff that behind the scenes. And look, it's a business. Yeah. So, you know, it's not like I'm not saying that Sony's being shady. I think it's more business. Of a strategy. Yeah, like
it's business. It's straight up business.
It's Buzz, you know, get
no disrespect to Suzuki-san. He was just there to help push the title across.
Mm. Yeah. Look, plain I put the money down. Within seconds,
the man deserves
Andrew,
to have his vision. Finished.
He was with us. He was looking at me laughing, like, "Yo, Godfrey's putting the money quick." I love Samu so much.
It's hard. That's one of those games that's hard to describe to people why you care so much.
But
because
see,
if you weren't there, you don't know.
Not for nothing.
Yeah.
You threw your wallet at the computer strictly for closure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The story needed.
Yeah.
You just wanted to finish the story.
And because I'm a fan too.
And I want to support you, Suzuki-san. Like what you said, like he is a living legend of game design. Yeah. Some of the things he came up with are still being used to this day by tons of companies, inspired probably countless of developers all over the world.
Yeah.
He deserves to have the chance to finish his legacy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if that gets him a free trip across, you know, from Japan to the United States to talk for a minute,
I seriously wonder how that game is going to finish 14 years later. Or 15 years later.
I have a theory, but I'm not going to say it.
I'm sure there's a lot of fan theories.
I'm sure there's dozens of theories all over the place, but I just wonder how that game is going to translate 14, 15 years later, and will it hit the same way? Because, I mean, we've changed as a society, and I don't know if that game style or that story, I'm straight talking out the side of my head, because I didn't play the first or the second one, so I have no clue.
No,
but I wonder... Yeah. Is that game style slash type going to translate 14, 15 years later because of the way society has changed?
That's a good question.
Correct. It was a completely different world 14 years ago in the world of Shenmue.
It was ahead of its time when it came out.
Ahead of its time.
Ahead of its time. So.
But I can see what he's saying. I mean, definitely some of the ideas and the concepts probably would not hold water with the modern gamer who does not have attachment to Shenmue.
I just feel that. Because of how it's been so long, I don't want the story to change. Yeah, change the gameplay and change certain things, but don't change.
Don't turn
the
it into
story.
A focus group scenario where you're showing it to people like, do you like this better or do you like this better? Like,
yeah.
I would assume that you had a vision in mind for the story for years, and he probably fiddled around with it for the last 14 years because he had probably, you know, had some free time to think about it.
I go to this website, ShenmueDojo.com. Mm. I don't know if it's still around or not, but I was going to that website daily, weekly, like when there was like rumors about the game, they're going to bring a Samu 3 or what. Dude, I used to go to that website nonstop. So shout out to them. All right. So let's talk about a conversation here. Now, the reason why I started off the conversation about E3, is it too packed? It was too much? Because a lot of gamers got invited to the convention to go to E3 for the first time. So, yeah. What are your thoughts about that? About E3, a lot of non-bloggers and non-people coming. I really want to get your opinion about this. Because I think it was, to me, it was cool, but at the same time, I was like, whoa.
It's a touchy subject. because we as blogger slash enthusiasts get privy to a lot more than what the standard regular public, you know, the regular Joe off, you know, off the side of the street would get. So it takes some patience and the ability to step back and see from the outside perspective and see from somebody else's perspective who doesn't normally get the access. So part one of that is our side, where we, you know, we put the time and the effort to go to an event like E3, which is supposed to be an industry exclusive event.
Agreed.
Okay, so, you know, we have our set times, we have our schedules, we have our appointments, like Paulson said at the beginning, you know, we have to traverse, you know, thousands of square feet of convention space to get from appointment to appointment. And, you know, as it is, we still have to deal with industry people stopping in the middle of the hall to take pictures.
Oh, yeah.
But that's part of E3. We accept it because we've been here before and we know what to expect, so we deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
But then you see the second side where you have, you know, the common fan from the street who was lucky enough to fly from or drive or however they got here from wherever they were at, you know, were given a free pass to come to E3. Now they're clogging up lanes or taking up times at booths and conventions It's interfering with our opportunity to do what we typically do. Now, you've got the Comic-Cons, you've got PAXs, you know, across the country and across the world now, because you've got PAX in Australia and, you know, you've got, you know, different events where consumers can come and see the developers and publishers hawk their wares. So they have their opportunities to get that exposure to things that people like us or anybody else or anybody else in the industry would have. So the argument is should we have our industry exclusive stuff not to slight the regular, you know, the public, but give us our opportunity to provide that coverage without the additional interference or people in the way.
Here's the thing. How many people got invited? It was like maybe 1,000, right?
ESA gave
badges to 500 to Microsoft, and
how many from Nintendo?
That's the thing. I don't know. Certain companies got a couple good badges for their fans.
And then there's standard people who went out of their way and actually threw down the big numbers.
But here's the thing. Here's the thing. I understand that people still like stuck up like industry, the media and all this stuff. But I feel that the industry is changing, and I feel that I know a lot of people are not going to agree about this. They're not going to agree on this at all. But I feel like they need E3. You need the fans also to be there. They're not bloggers. They're just fans of Sony, Nintendo, Xbox, or Bethesda, whatever. They are attending E3 because they're just excited of the product of the company. You need that in the industry now because the industry changes. It's not the same how it used to be when I started 10 years ago. So it's like a lot of media folks they don't like this at all. They're like completely mad. And I think Paris to me earlier today, he was like, hey, I was standing. This is like, I believe like 40, 30 minutes before our interview with Aaron. Mm-hmm. He was like, oh yeah, I was checking out. I was at the GameStop booth. And I believe Cliffy B was there right after Aaron. And he was like hating on this. He didn't like this idea at all. He was like, look, fans should just go to like PAX and or Comic-Con or other. He just doesn't like.
No. Let me.
That's what he said.
No, that's not what he was saying. What Cliffy B was saying was he feels that the spectacle of E3 is a big waste of money. He was just saying he's passionate about making games and all that. That's why even when he thought he was going to retire, he only lasted 6 months before he was trying to jump back in and create a new studio and doing what he's doing. He's saying that to reach the fans now, it's become digital to be able to do it. You don't need to put on this dog and pony show that is E3 to get fans excited about gaming. He goes, you have social media to do that. He's more worried about getting his game on Steam, on PlayStation Network, on Xbox Live, things like that.
Not enough.
I'm not the man. I'm just telling you what he said. I'm just telling you what he said. Now, here's what I'll say, my personal opinion, since you put me into it.
Yeah.
I do think E3 needs to be more focused on the industry, on covering these titles, getting the media and everything access to everything, which obviously is happening now. I'm not saying it doesn't happen. My fear is this balloon is eventually going to pop like it did in 2006. You're going to have over 100,000 people running around the convention center and no one's going to get work done. That's my fear. That's why we have PAX, PAX East, PAX South, Comic-Con, etc. That's where fans are supposed to be able to interact with these games and be able to see the developers and do all that kind of stuff. Now, don't get me wrong. What Microsoft did this week was fantastic. The Fan Fest, getting people into the media briefing, the Twitch party that's going on right now as we're recording this.
Yeah.
They're getting fans into that. That's fine. My issue would be the show floor. And now, when we talked about this already, my solution to that would be, I'm not saying keep the fans off the E3 show floor, but do what they used to do 10 years ago.
Tokyo Game Show. Tokyo Game Show.
Let them talk. Why you got to interrupt?
No. I'm at Tokyo Game Show.
I was trying to make my point is what they used to do 10 years ago was you let the media in for the first 3 or 4 days, and then on the weekend, it was open to the public, and then the average person gets a chance to come in and see all these games and go to the Xbox booth and all that. I'm not saying deprive the fans of being able to celebrate gaming. We're all gamers. Hell, I used to get my hustle on to get into E3 back in the day, too. I totally get it. I just don't want to see what right now may be getting 1,000 fans into E3 2 years from now turns into getting 10,000 fans into E3. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
It becomes a slippery slope.
It is a slippery slope, and we need the time and space to be able to do our job. Like, we're on this podcast right now talking about all the games that we got to sell. Like, I specifically remember I went from the Deus Ex appointment, the second it was over, I had to jump up and run from one hall all the way over to the other one to go see the next game. You know what I mean? Now imagine if there was another extra 15,000 people in the way.
Oh, it's a pain.
I wouldn't make it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's my only point. And I'm not hating on fans because we're all fans. I love gaming. Everyone loves gaming. We all want to see this stuff. But there's places and venues that are for that purpose. I don't think the E3 show floor is for that purpose.
I'll say this, and I agree with you. Maybe on a Thursday, let the fans in.
Yeah.
Last day of E3, right? Tokyo Game Show, I believe the first day or two is like media, and everybody else is just fans, open to the public. I think that's the right way. But remember, too, this is their first year to actually do this, ESA.
Mm-hmm. They're testing the waters. They wanted to see the response, and it was certainly very, very beneficial from the press conferences standpoint. Because I agree, the fans deserve to be at the press conferences because they are the ones that absolutely lose their minds when things are announced.
Of course, I
lost my mind as a couple of things they announced over the last couple of days. That's good. That's hype. We don't need a bunch of jaded journalists sitting there being like,
"That's the thing." That's the thing too, Paris. Let me tell you,
that's not good.
Imagine it was just media. Dude, there's sometimes I'm like, man, these guys are like grumpy. They don't care. They're not making the industry excited anymore. You need the fans involved, involved to like press conferences and let them attend E3, maybe the last day. Because the issue that I had with 2008 or 2007, when was it? Santa Monica? Was it 2007. Man. There was no excitement. It was very like
2008 was even worse because it was back at the convention center and it was a ghost town.
Yeah. There was no excitement.
I agree.
The media doesn't make, like, you need more than just media to make the industry like that event exciting.
But let me make this point though, and I do agree with you to a certain extent. I saw Phil Spencer twice today on the show floor just walking around. As an average Joe, he didn't have a PR handler with him, nothing. He just was walking around. At 15,000 fans into that scenario, he's a rock star. It'd be impossible for him to do that. You know what I mean?
I agree.
Even a personality like a Cliffy B, for example, impossible.
They're going to stop traffic in the hallways.
And then they would be dissuaded from even wanting to be at such an event, and they would be stuck up in meeting rooms all day and having people come to them versus being able to actually go out and see what PlayStation has, sees what Nintendo has, sees what these, you know, other publishers may have or indie developers may have for their games. But if you have it, again, PAX, do you really think Phil Spencer's going to walk around PAX?
No.
Without a handler, without someone around him to pull him away?
It will go crazy.
Yeah, you can't do it.
Yeah.
And I don't want E3 to be PAX. I want E3 to be E3. I want PAX to be PAX. They both serve their own purpose.
Agreed. So, Paz, I know you. There's a couple of things you would like to talk about. Games, right?
Yeah, very just quick. To finish up the things I saw today.
Yeah, make it quick.
Yeah, to see Afro Samurai 2 for a little bit. Very impressed by it. I love the direction they're going with the episodic development time. The RZA getting, you know, underground, like really underground hip-hop artist, recording on sessions, making the games unique in style. Very impressed by it. Moving on, I saw Sniper Ghost Warrior 3 from CI Games. Wow. That game is gorgeous. It's like almost pre-alpha. It's super early build. But what I got hands-on and played and watched someone else play the same level as well, very impressive. Very slow. In my opinion, like probably the most realistic sniping game they've ever made.
Wow.
It's just you by yourself. You know, it's set in the middle of Georgia during a proxy war between America and Russia, and you're basically sent in as a one-man army to get all the intel yourself, extract yourself, take out targets. Like, there's no helicopters to come get you. It's all you, one life only, make it count. Very punishing, but like super rewarding as well.
Mm-hmm.
But to close out the day, I saw my second Oculus Rift title.
I gotta hear this.
It's called The Assembly, and it's from a studio called In Dreams.
Mm-hmm.
But basically what it is a first-person adventure game, almost in the style of, say, like Half-Life 2, but without the combat aspect. So it's more of a puzzle thing. But what I loved about it was the introduction sequence where it's you're strapped to a gurney being loaded into this secret underground laboratory in the middle of the Mojave Desert, and you don't know what's going on. Essentially, you're waking up, you're strapped, and all you can do is look your head around, and you can see all the corners of it, and you just hear exposition of the characters talking that are pushing you, and you're like, where am I going? Where is this facility? What's going on? And they sedate you, and then you wake up somewhere else as another character. And I gotta say, it's most intuitive, like, you know, head tracking I've seen so far in a game. It's wonderful, the sense of the depth of your environment. What I love particularly about the demo is, you know, anytime you are, you know, supposed to explore a room, you know, normally you would think everything would just be at eyesight level, but no, sometimes you actually have to stand up off the couch and look up and down on top of things. You can look on top of shelves, you can put your head down and look up underneath things to look for hidden clues or keys.
Mm-hmm.
The level of detail they had, like, you know, the faces on the characters were fantastic, because in their words, it's not an issue of polygon, it's an issue of the skins they're using, the resolution, making it look right. So, like, even if you put your face right in front of, like, something and examine all the details, it looks good, and it plays good as well. And I liked that it was very, it didn't, you know, spoil itself early. It slowly unveiled itself. It kept adding gameplay elements. Second level, now you can move around and explore. Third element, now you have puzzles you have to interact. I love the vibe of it. I haven't played a good adventure game in quite a while, but in terms of, they want this to be a launch title for the Oculus Rift, Valve's system, and the Morpheus, it looks fantastic, plays fantastic. And I'd probably recommend anybody, if you want to try VR and you haven't yet, this is probably a really good starting point, because it eases you in without that really nauseous feeling that can come from some other VR programs out there.
Speaking about that, we saw you today and you were like, oh yeah, I got sick.
Yeah.
Was it because of that game, or was other games that you got to play that got you
I think I didn't
nauseous?
Eat enough, so that probably came in a factor of it, but I think I was surprised, because for me, I don't get motion sickness from video games because I play way too many first-person shooters.
Mm-hmm.
But this actually got to me after a while. So maybe it was probably around the 30-minute mark. I started noticing, like, man, I feel kind of lightheaded right now. I need to sit down. Wait, I am sitting down. I'm playing a game. And a little jarring. Sometimes you take a break. But, you know, as the guy was interviewing said, he was the same way. At first, he could only play for, like, 10 to 15 minutes at a time. Then, like, you know, and now I can play 3 hours at a time, because once you adjust to it and adapt, it becomes natural.
That's the bad thing.
It's like you're not thinking about looking at something. You have the automatic human reaction of, what was that noise? And all you have to do is turn your head and you can see it. It's not, you don't have to worry about getting controllers. They have a controller you can use for, you know, interacting with the A button, and you can move around with it. But I was just very impressed for, you know, from an adventure game standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
This was on point. It was fascinating enough. but didn't spoil anything, because you could definitely tell this was a very plot story driven game and they really want to tell this great, gritty conspiracy style theory story. But the gameplay is pretty solid too.
Is this for launch, right?
Yeah, this is for launch. For all the VR platforms.
Awesome. That's cool. Anything else, guys, before we wrap it up? I mean, it's been a great, overall, I think it was a pretty good E3, right? I right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so far, it's been pretty good.
I'm loving it so far.
I think it's going to get better for like the next 2 days.
Yeah, we got some big stuff coming the next 2 days.
Yeah. So, Pete? Anything else you wanted to say? Or
not even E3 related at this point. It's just shout out to the Golden State Warriors. Congratulations on winning the NBA 2015 Finals.
They played a great game. That was a fantastic effort on their part.
Fantastic. That was good.
Not clapping for them. I'm Laker fan. We in the Laker town.
Well, hey, if we're going to say this, I'm a Hawks fan, so screw LeBron.
It's West Coast. It's your state.
No. Help me how to cheer.
That's not how teams work, Danny. It's not where you live.
No, here's the thing. Real talk. No, I'm very happy for Golden State, and I'm happy for the NBA because it's team ball. Steph is a superstar, but they won because they're a team.
Yeah.
Not LeBron going 1-on-12 and just willing them to, which no disrespect to LeBron, what he did was amazing.
Otherworldly.
Yeah, but it just goes to show you one man can't do it. And I know we're talking basketball now, but it's not the pick and roll post up game. It's getting back. The Golden State won because they're a mid range jumper shooting team.
Yeah.
The mid range jumper was lost in the sport, and I'm getting off tangent, so I'm shut up, but I'm happy for it.
No, I understand what you're saying.
All right, cool.
No, it's more that they broke the mold of what a championship team has become.
Yeah.
Like the profile and the design of what a winning team for the finals.
Yeah.
Or is considered to be a winning, the winning profile, and they broke the mold for that. So shout out to them.
Definitely.
And
all right. Well, we're going to wrap it up, guys. Head over to gamertagradio.com or play.it. Listen to our past episodes or listen to our coverage during the week of E3. Shout out to iTunes for featuring us on the front page of iTunes, and also Stitcher. Shout out to them for posting our content front page. We need that. So give us a call, 76-273-7GTR. That's 76-273-7GTR. Or email us, fanmail@gamertagradio.com. Let us know how we're doing. You like our coverage or not? Keep us posted. And that's it. Until next time, we are out. Peace.
See you.
You're listening to Gamertag Radio. Be sure to like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Thanks for listening. Tune in next week.